Amen. You know, and I know, that some days you cannot win for losing. You can't, no matter what you do, somebody is going to criticize it. I was listening to a Methodist pastor earlier this week, and he was telling the story of when he went down for a meeting in Atlanta. Oh, this would have been a week or 2 weeks ago. And the meeting went fine. It was time for him to go back to the Atlanta airport, and so from his hotel, he called an Uber. Now, for those of you who haven't seen how this has worked, it's pretty amazing stuff. You take your cell phone, you go to the app, you request an Uber, and then you get to watch it on your phone. As they come into range, they know where you are, and you know where they are. And the Uber pulls up in front of you, and you open the door, and you get in. Well, normally, when this pastor gets in, the routine goes like this. Hi, good morning, how are you? Fine, quiet. And you get a relaxed ride to the airport with usually no conversation. Not on this day. The Uber pulled up, he opened the door, got in and said, hi, how are you? Good morning. And she asked, all right, where do you want to go? The Atlanta airport. And then she proceeded to tell him how she was. Turns out, earlier that day, she had given another passenger a ride to the airport, and it did not go well. Passenger got in. Hi, good morning, how are you? Where are you going? To the airport. Oh, well, I work at the airport. This is an easy one for me. So when we go to the airport, where would you like me to drop you off? Would you like the domestic terminal or the international terminal? I'd like to go to the international terminal, please. Oh, okay. Well, just out of curiosity, where are you flying? Miami. Well, I can drop you at the international terminal, but you do need to know that the flight you want is at the domestic terminal. No, I want the international. Well, just out of curiosity, what airline are you flying? Spirit. You know, I work at the airport full-time, and I do want you to know that Spirit does not have any international flights. They only have domestic flights. Would you please let me drop you at the domestic? No. I need to go to the international terminal. Well, I can do that. But if you do get off, it is a very, very long walk from the international to the domestic terminals, and you're going to be really, really exhausted. You can go in and down through security and then take the train over, but it's a lot of extra effort to do this. No, international. By the time they got to the international airport, by the time they got to the terminal, the passenger had already taken her phone, had opened it up to the app, and had reported this driver. That driver now got the poorest rating, and the passenger had filed a complaint, and that means that immediately that driver does not get paid. And so now you arrive at the airport with a cranky passenger who wants to be dropped off in the wrong place, is giving you no pay, no compliment, no rating, and no tip, along with all the frustration. So at this point, the pastor that was telling about this said, he asked, so where did you drop her off? And she said, oh, I just didn't have the heart. I dropped her at domestic. You know what? There are days when you can't win for losing. Even when you are completely in the right, somebody's going to complain about it. Somebody's going to criticize you. You know this. Every single one of us have lived through this. We had a great conversation in middle school, Sunday school today, talking with the kids about what have you ever been criticized by your parents? Have there ever been times when you knew you were right with your parents and you tried to correct them? And how did that go? Man, it's hard being criticized even when you're right. This is what we talk about today. We have all been criticized, so what are you going to do about it? Now, in my experience, there are two ways that you can deal with criticism. One is that you can stand up, put your feathers all in a kerfuffle, and fight against it. Somebody comes at you with criticism, and immediately, you get angry and come back at them. Let me ask you, how's that working for you? It doesn't work well. It doesn't work well. Now, there are times when we need to stand up and really go after that. There are times when it is a justice issue and we need to fight against criticism. But today, I want to give you another alternative. What would happen instead of doing that if we would stand in the face of criticism? Instead of fighting against it, we stand in the face of it. And there's a big difference. When we fight against criticism, we are taking our time, our effort, and our energy, and we are redirecting it away from our purpose and our direction in order to fight on the sidelines. When we stand in the face of criticism, we're not taking the time and the effort to fight that criticism. Instead, we are staying focused in the direction that we want to go. This is what Nehemiah did. Let me tell you about it. In the year 444 BCE, before the Common Era, Nehemiah was one of the advisors to the king of Persia. He was Jewish, having been born and raised in the Persian Empire. This now was almost 150 years after Jerusalem had been conquered and destroyed. For almost a century, there had been Jews living back in Jerusalem, but what Nehemiah found out in 444 was that Jerusalem was a mess. It was a disaster zone. The temple had been rebuilt, but the city was still a shambles, and the wall around it was a pile of rubble. And so, he asked permission of the king of Persia. He was on an advisor relationship. He could talk to the king, and he asked him, "Would you please make me the governor of Jerusalem so that I can go back and repair those walls?" The governor not only agreed with him, but gave him letters of passage that enabled him to get there safely and initiate trade agreements. He went back to Jerusalem, and it was a disaster. Worse than he thought. Late at night, he would get on his horse, and he would ride in the moonlight around the periphery of the city, simply inspecting the damage and seeing what was going on. All right, now stop to think about this. You and I live in the northern hills. It was 130 years ago, or maybe 140 years ago, that the gold rush came. Have you been up in the hills and trying to see evidence of the gold rush? Have you seen those old mines? Have you seen where the old cabins used to be? It's very, very difficult. Time passes, and things wear down and tear down. Well, this was 150 years after those walls had been torn down. It was a pile of rubble and seemed impossible to fix. Nehemiah was overwhelmed, but as he continued to ride around the city, he developed a plan. And working with his advisors, he came before the Jewish people and he said, "I think we can rebuild this. I think we can do this. Here's my plan." And the people said, yeah, let's do it. So here's what they did. This is where it would come in handy in your studies if you had a map of ancient Jerusalem. When you go into the book of Nehemiah in your studies, you're going to find some wonderfully boring passages where what he does is to say, "And this tribe started at the sheep's gate, and they fixed up to that tower, and from the tower down to that gate, this family and this tribe and this man were in charge of that." It gives a complete listing. Starting in the northeast corner of Jerusalem, up by the sheep's gate, and going counterclockwise, it lists every tribe, every family, every leader that is in charge of this rebuilding project, of this monstrous renovation. clearing the rubble, and rebuilding the walls. It's fascinating. That wonderfully boring passage all of a sudden takes on a whole new meaning when you begin to see how they did this renovation. Now, the punchline to this whole thing is they did indeed succeed in rebuilding the walls, and they did it in 52 days. But that's not where we're at. Where we're at today is they started the project, and the entire periphery of the wall, they started rebuilding simultaneously. Now, if you were one of the current rulers, one of the current governors, how would you react to this? Well, let me tell you how they reacted to it. They were mad about it. At first, they were laughing to say, oh, yeah, like this is going to happen, like you're going to be able to do this. And then they saw that it was working. And they became really angry. And the way that that anger came out was through criticism. Listen to these words again. When Sanballat heard that they were rebuilding the wall, oh, wait a minute. The name Sanballat is not a Jewish name, not a Jewish name. He became angry and was greatly incensed, and he criticized the Jews, and in the presence of his associates and the army, he said, "What are these feeble Jews doing? Will they restore their wall? Will they finish it in a day? Will they bring these stones back to life?" Now listen to this. And Tobiah the Ammonite. A word that normally we would just pass right over and say, yeah, whatever. Ammonite. Wait a minute. It doesn't say Tobiah from Jerusalem. It doesn't say Tobiah the Jew. It says Tobiah the Ammonite. This was a foreigner. This was a man whose family and political power was down to the southeast. When Jerusalem fell 150 years earlier, there was a power vacuum. And the Syrians moved down from the north, and the Babylonians from the west, from the east, and the Ammonites from the southeast. And a new power was in. When they started rebuilding these walls, those who were in power did not want this to happen. And the way they came after the Jews was through criticism, powerful criticism. Ridiculing criticism. And Tobiah the Ammonite said, look at those walls. You call that rebuilding? The first fox that runs over them, those walls are going to fall over. This was the criticism. It wasn't just empty criticism. It had teeth to it. Those who were governing inside were criticizing, but those who were in the surrounding neighborhoods outside began to rumble. They did not want to see these walls rebuilt. And so they began rumbling about forming an army and coming and destroying and killing and stopping the process. Why? Because once those walls were rebuilt, the entire political structure in that region would change. No longer would Jerusalem be vulnerable. Again, it would become a power center. It would change politically. It would change economically. It would change geographically. Old trade routes would now be rerouted through Jerusalem again. They did not want to see this happen. Even though the Jews were in the right, even though Nehemiah and the priest Ezra were focused in the right direction, the criticism was horrendous. What did they do? Did they stand and fight the criticism, or did they stand in the face of the criticism? Never once did they take their eyes off the goal. The object was to get those walls built. They did not take the time to go out and fight the criticism. They stayed put, and they stood in the face of the criticism. There's a big difference. Now, what they did was then to say, all right, we are in danger, so here's how we're going to do it. They appointed part of the work team every day to be equipped with weapons, and they stood guard. And so overnight, the entire periphery of Jerusalem was now guarded. Part of the tribes would guard, and part of the tribes would build, and the next day they would trade places. so that there were always fresh workers and always somebody standing guard. But never once did they go out to fight the criticism. They stood in the face of criticism, focused on where they needed to go. Is this you? All right, let me put this into a Midwest story. How would you do this? I started ministry over in eastern South Dakota in Wessington Springs. And there came a day when the Wessington Springs Council was approached by the Federal Aviation Administration, the FAA. And the FAA said, we would like to build an airport. We don't have enough air runways out there in South Dakota. We would like to put one, and we'd like to choose you. Here's the deal that we propose. We would like to pay for 90% of this runway and airport with federal dollars, and we would ask you would pay 10% of it, and then we would ask, would you help us with the maintenance? Well, let me tell you about the Wessington Springs airport that existed before that. When you would drive through Wessington Springs from the south, going north on the county oil, you would get north of town, and there was a pasture off to the right-hand side of the road. Friends used to call us and say, we'd like to come and visit you. Can we fly in? And we would laugh and say, yeah, you can do that. Hold on, we have to look up the number of the crop sprayer. Well, but you can't come during June, late May, June, maybe early July, because that's haying season and there's too many hay bales on the runway. And if you do manage to come in, if the crop sprayer brings you in dodging the hay bales, call us in advance so that we can shoo the deer off. And we would laugh saying this. That's what their runway was. And when you couldn't land on that strip, on that pasture, you would land on the road next to it. And if that road in the middle of the winter was not good enough, you went to the next open road, which happened to be Federal Highway 34. They actually told the story of the day that somebody was driving, one of the guys in the coffee shop was driving his pickup down Highway 34 when an airplane flew right over him and landed on the highway in front of him. Okay, dear Wessington Springs, do you think maybe a new airport would be a good idea? Yes, no. That town blew up. That debate was horrendous. We don't need an airport. We don't have any airplanes. Yeah, put that one together. And so there were three factions in town. One faction did not want the airport. No, you can't tell us what to do, and no, we don't want any of our tax money paying for that. But there was another faction that was for the airport who decided that what they needed to do was to fight the criticism. And they took all of their energy into the local paper, they took all their energy into the coffee shops, into the gossip circles, and they went head to head and were fighting. When is the last time that someone has been critical of you, criticized you, and came after you? How did that work for you? For me, in my experience, the harder someone pushes me, the harder they criticize me, the more I am going to stay in my position. Oh, don't you talk politics to me. Oh, don't you talk community. Oh, don't you talk policy to me. Because I'm just going to go deeper. And I'm going to get more entrenched. And my experience is that every time I have been the one who has been criticizing, that's exactly what's happened. I didn't pull people out of their positions. I drove them deeper into them. When you fight someone, that's exactly what happens. Now, there is a time and there is a place when you need to fight criticism. But I think in the vast majority of times that when you stand in the face of criticism and keep your focus where it needs to be, that life is better. So there was a third faction in Wessington Springs. It came out of the city council, and these were the folks who said, we would love to have an airport. We think this would be a great asset. And so instead of wasting any of their breath fighting the criticism, instead they came to the council and they said, this needs to be a community issue. So we're going to put it on the ballot. Dear city, would you like to have an airport? We think this would be a great idea. Let me tell you about the economic benefits. This is what would happen. Can you imagine pheasant season? And on opener, how many airplanes are going to fly in and put dollars on Main Street? Do you remember that time when we tried to land an air ambulance? And we couldn't because we didn't have the runway for it. Well, now we're going to be able to get an air ambulance in. And oh, by the way, this means we're going to be able to fly your father, your grandmother, your son out of town and to the hospital in time. Well, the long and the short of the story is that that was the faction that prevailed. And they have an airport. But this is my point. Now put this into your life. Put this into your life. How much time, effort, and energy are we wasting fighting criticism when instead we would make far greater headway if we would stand in the face of criticism and work to a common goal? This is what we're about. Well, I need help in and how to do that. That's why I have a front pew of kids today. This is not just a group, a gathering of middle school students. Ready? Go. This is an acting troupe. And I want them to help me say to you, we need to go deeper. We need to go further. We need to go higher, not by fighting the criticism, but by staying focused on accepting the adventure and going forward in the direction that we have. So this is a ship. And this is a crew. And we'll see, as they talk to us about crossing over, what we have to say. Are you ready? Ahoy, mateys.
Welcome aboard, let's go. Mateys.
Looks like a great day for sailing. I brought the life preservers.
Good. You know my motto.
Always behind your ears.
No, safety first. Let's go over everything before we get started. If anyone falls overboard, the first mate will throw the man, person, overboard a line. The crew will keep their eyes on the lost person at all times while I circle the boat to recover the person from the depths.
I mean to be rude, Captain, but there are only three of us on board.
Thoreau Jay's Complete Annotated Handbook for Water Safety, Volume 7, strictly states that we follow this procedure.
Remember, Captain, you won't really turn the boat because we are still tied to the dock.
We must do things by the book. Our first concern is saving the lost. And you remember my motto, all for one and one for all. No, 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 safety first.
Captain, how will we save the lost if we are tied to the dock?
I run a tight ship, and we will observe correct protocol. Besides, the lost will come to us. First, put on your life preservers.
Aye, aye, Captain.
Not much wind today, sir.
Don't worry about the wind. We're much safer without it. And, you know, my motto.
Be all that you can be in the...
Safety first.
There seems to be stronger wind further out. Perhaps we could untie the dock lines and sail the boat.
This boat has never been untied. Why should we start now? Sailing is risky. You never know where the wind will take you. It's much safer at the dock. And, you know my motto.
I can't believe it's not butter.
No, no, no. Safety first.
I've noticed a boat or two actually sail away from the dock out into the deeper water.
I suppose that if everyone sailed from the dock, you'd sail from the dock. You're a follower. That's why you're the first mate. And I'm the very model of a modern major general.
In short, Majesty Illogical, he is the very model of a modern major general.
Just look around you. Look at all the boats tied safely to the dock. What's wrong with the dock? It's stable. It's secure.
Captain, I came on boat thinking that we might sail to the other side.
And where would you get an idea like that?
Let's go further. Deeper.
We've always done it this way. Once a week, we come on board this ship, we memorize the rituals, from the Roger's Complete Annotated Handbook for Water Safety, Volume 7.
Are you sure you aren't reading from Sailing for Dummies?
Oh, and you know my motto.
Be prepared.
No, no, no. Safety first. But we're getting closer. At least we're finally getting somewhere.
That's the problem, Captain. We aren't getting anywhere. We're still tied to the dock.
I agree. Week after week, coming on board, putting on our life preservers, memorizing the handbook, but never untying the dock lines. Never really sailing.
It depends on your definition of sailing.
Watch out.
Oh no, mayday, mayday, man, I mean person overboard.
Arg!
Ahoy, mateys.
This is beginning to sound like mutiny.
Arg! Ahoy, mateys.
I am the captain of my fate.
I didn't know there was a poet besides captain of my soul.
State your identity and your purpose.
I be the Scourge of the Seven Seas.
I be the Jolly Roger, the Blackest Spear, the Scallywag, the Scavenge Dog.
Alas, ye landlubber.
Mighty, heave-ho.
Blow the man down.
Maroon.
Hornswoggled.
Hornswoggled? What in heaven's name does that mean?
This is a hostile offshore corporate takeover.
Shiver me timbers.
We're going to sail. Mutiny on the Bounty. Cut the shorelines.
You can't. I forbid that you do anything.
Hoist the mainsail.
Aye, aye, sir.
Unfurl the jib. There's more than sailing than safety first.
Let's cross the other side. I can feel the wind.
Remember our motto.
Higher. Deeper.
Further.
We're sailing.
That's where we're going. Higher, deeper, further. But what it means is you're going to have to untie the boat from the dock and get out onto the deep waters. And what that means is you cannot stay tied to the dock fighting the criticism. That is what happens. When we fight the criticism and get sucked into those arguments, we are stuck at the dock. It's only when we can stand in the face of criticism, listening to the criticism, learning from the criticism, growing in the criticism, but never taking our eyes off of where we need to be. That is the power. Further, deeper, higher, untie the boat and let's go. May it be this week that you can stand in the face of criticism, claim the truth, be diligent in all that you do, stick to it. Farther, deeper, higher. Amen. Would you bow with me? Gracious God, I want to give you thanks for all the ways that you help us, that you guide us, Lord, not into the arguments, but rather toward the goal. Help us, Lord, not to get distracted, but rather to keep our eyes on you, to stay focused,